All right, so episode 7.
Yeah, episode 7. Okay, it's the first time we're doing this with the name ready to go, right?
Yeah, we're not introducing it. It just exists.
All right, so I'm going to say... How do I? But I don't want to say No Sick Days Podcast. I want to say Welcome to
No Sick Days. A gaming podcast.
A gaming podcast.
Yeah, that way we have two words in between our name and what we do. Well, I guess what we do is a gaming podcast, but two words in between podcast and No Sick Days. So we're not.
No Sick Days, a gaming podcast. I'm John.
I'm Chris.
And we are the hosts of the podcast. This is going downhill.
Unsurprisingly.
It's going downhill very fast.
We've been playing games together.
Yeah. All right. So it's my turn to do the intro. So here we go. Yeah. So we have been playing games together for 28 years. We are also both self-employed.
Yeah.
So our gaming schedule is a little different. So we get together on Tuesdays, late morning, to talk about games we've been playing, things we've been up to, that kind of stuff.
General gaming goodness.
Yeah, for some reason, we felt like people would want to listen to it.
We hope we're accurate in that assumption.
Or if no one listens to it, that's okay, because then we can still hang out and talk.
We listen to it, yeah. If nothing else.
Like, yeah, these conversations are going to happen no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So...
And if you count the... multiple times we listen to it, we actually have multiple listeners.
That's true.
So think about it.
Hey, I know that while I was on vacation last weekend, my mom and my sister mentioned to me that, oh yeah, we listened to your podcast. I'm like, really? And they said, yeah, we listened to the intro and then we stopped. And mom's like, yeah, I've been hearing you and Chris talk about like that for 28 years, basically. It's like, yeah, it never made any sense to me. It doesn't make sense to me now. I'm not going to listen to the rest.
That's
of
her
it.
Version of the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like,
I've been listening to you for 28 years and stop.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, it reminded me when I was driving you all around, you talking in the backseat about it. I didn't get it.
That seems fair.
It's like,
pretty great.
Well, hey, Mom, if you're listening now, thank you. And go ahead and tune out because now we're going to talk about video games.
Okay. Yep. Fun times.
thanks for the metric.
Sure.
All right, so
we're on to updates.
Yeah, so today we're going to do quick updates. I got a whole section on sports games because tonight is the Rockets. So I played some sports games over the weekend, so I figured pseudo topical, right?
I think that makes sense. And we haven't really talked much about sports games before. Neither of us play them super regularly, usually.
There have been times where...
There have been times where you have, and I have too, I guess.
Yeah.
I've dabbled in Madden and a little bit into FIFA. And our friend circle has also done.
Yeah, like Ben and Juan were really
played a lot
big.
Of FIFA.
Oh yeah, I remember those time in high school where we all made our own a Madden team of all of our own. We were all the same name. Yeah, I think we spent more time building the team than actually playing.
Yeah, we're certainly not unique in that aspect.
I guess not. No,
there's no way.
All right, and then part three is going to be.
I'm going to talk about Super Mario Odyssey and kind of delving into the reasons why we play games and how that. Meshes with our appeal for why we like the games we like.
Cool.
So pretty simple stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
no big deal.
Broad ranging. That's you're gonna.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes. I'm excited about it.
Close up the whole podcast after that.
Yeah, we'll be done. This is the last episode.
All right, let's get to it. You want to start off with Tekken 7?
Yeah. So I have a short update on Tekken 7 because I got to the yellow ranks, which doesn't mean much. To everyone who doesn't play Tekken, but is kind of the equivalent of platinum for other game ranking systems.
It's like top
tier. So the like
tier?
Bronze, well, sort of and not sort of. So like goes bronze, silver, gold, platinum, diamond, master, crazy master, whatever level of master after that, depending on the game. So I'm platinum. So I feel like I'm pretty good at the game, but compared to tournament people, that's still nothing, right? Because being platinum is like top. I don't know what it is, but let's say top 1%, top 2% of the game, right? But the people that go to tournaments are the top 0.0001% of the game.
Right.
So I'm still nowhere on the same stage as any of those. But if I went to an arcade, even though I don't play on an arcade stick at home, I still would crush the vast majority of people.
Whoa. Big
words. So that's sort of where it's at.
We can test that.
We could definitely test it. Let's go. All right, podcast over. We're gonna go play Tekken.
I think Pinballs is open.
I think so. I think they have Tekken 5. They have an older Tekken. They're not Tekken 7.
So we need to hunt down a Tekken 7 machine.
There is one at Arcade UFO.
Where's that?
Campus. Where the old, what was it, Einstein's?
Einstein's.
Yeah, so that where that used to be.
I'm glad there's still an arcade there. I figure they all got pushed out.
I do actually want to go there. I think at some point when I'm actually around that area on a Sunday or Saturday, I'll probably stop by and play some games. Because they have tournaments weekly.
Okay.
For all the major fighting games.
We should do an on-location podcast.
That'd be fun.
Because we're going to be doing with DreamHack, which... All I'm going to mention is you got your tickets.
I got my tickets at DreamHack.
I'm buying mine this week.
Sweet.
I got Erin to give me the weekend off. She got mad at me because she's like, John, there's already too many people taking time off. And I'm like, well, and she's like, you weren't supposed to do that. And I was like, well. And I was like, DreamHack. So I'm going to
DreamHack.
She has not had any of it when I was explaining it to her. She's like, I don't care, just whatever. I said, I'll still be in Austin, so if like things go crazy at the brewery, I can always get it over there if I need to.
You'll be close by.
Yeah, and she's training up a bunch of people to run the tap room, so I have fewer shifts in there.
And you don't have to be there for the entire weekend, right? You can go to the places, the times that make sense.
Yeah, so basically I'm taking so normally I don't take a weekend off. Usually I work like one day of the week, and I try to get like 2 days off a week, but it's it's rarely like Saturday and Sunday.
Right.
So for that weekend, I'm actually taking Saturday and Sunday as my weekend, and I'm going to take Friday off as an actual vacation day.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's my plan.
I approve of it.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
I'll let Erin know you said that.
Just think of it. Don't tell her I'm involved. Okay. Okay, and then you have a update.
Yeah.
Nice. On...
Oh, yeah. Say it.
Two.
Lineage 2.
Is it actually Lineage 2? Is that what it's called? Actually, it's just Lineage 2. World Revolution, attack of the Korean overlords, spend money, please give it to us. Extreme Edition? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's okay. That's what I thought. On the nose. It's a very unwieldy name, but it's
working. Yeah, I don't know. It's making money.
So Lineage 2 Revolution is...
Oh, that's what it's actually called.
Yeah, is the mobile version of the Lineage 2 South Korean MMO. It's super fun.
Okay.
Chris doesn't believe me at all.
Okay.
I'm sure.
We'll talk about that when we get into playing games for different reasons.
Yeah. So a quick update here is this whole massive update just rolled out last week, which updated the dramatically raised level cap, added in a whole bunch of new, like... PvP stuff, a lot of more player interaction.
And they combine servers as well.
Now our server's like super racist.
What?
It's I don't know what happened, man. Like our server was like, the server I was on was really cool. Everybody, in the world chat, like normally that stuff can get kind of toxic.
Right.
It wasn't that bad. Now, every time I log in, there's like people are saying horrible shit.
Maybe it's all those Russian... like trolls that get hired to sow dissemination from America. This is their practice ground, is to make people hate each other in Lineage.
Like awful stuff. It's the point. I mean, I've got a pretty high tolerance and threshold for being offended. And I'm just like, some of the stuff people are talking, I'm like, come on. I'm not going to repeat any of it here because it's just not.
Sure. Yet. It's awful.
I've been blocking a lot of people.
If you've played games online with people, you've seen these things.
You know
things.
What I'm talking
it's
about.
It's just that the amount of frequency is.
So we got the server.
It's too damn high.
Yeah.
Too damn high.
After the server merge, it's just a whole lot of toxic people got, I don't know, whatever.
That's crappy. I like communication a lot in games, and it actually drives me nuts when I can't talk with people. We've talked about it a little bit before, I think, especially in regards to Hearthstone is one of the things, and CCGs in general. Hearthstone has no chat feature, and a lot of CCGs also don't have chat features.
Right.
And even though you have to deal with the toxicity of people playing online, and it kind of drives me crazy, I still would rather have the good communication that you can have sometimes. But at some point, if all it is just awful people saying awful things... Yeah. It does get to be a little bit much. And in an MMO, there's thousands of people talking at the same time. At least in a game of League of Legends or Overwatch or whatever where you can actually talk to people, you can go in, have your conversation that's awful with these people, then leave the game and never talk to them again.
True.
MMOs don't have that luxury.
Well, fortunately, they've got a block feature that's super easy to use. So it's like click, click, blocked.
And that's pretty common now.
And it retroactively wipes out all their stuff, too. So you can't, it's gone. Once they're blocked.
It's gone from your chat log.
Yeah, yeah. So I just move on.
Do you have to do that constantly? How bad?
I never had to do it before the server merge, and now I've blocked. I mean, I've only blocked like maybe 4 people. That's about it.
Okay.
But it's just that's, you know, infinite percent more than I was having to do it before.
Right.
So, but anyways, yeah. So the one bit. So one of the cool things we did recently is there's a clan dungeon that is very, very difficult. And we ran through our normal nightly clan dungeons. There's like 3 different types at 4 different difficulties in each type. We run through all 8 of those. And then we get to the third one, which we usually don't mess with too much because it's a pretty difficult one. Remember that a few episodes ago I talked about that one we spent forever trying to beat?
Right, and you spent 30 minutes and
yeah, eventually we're just
didn't
like,
happen.
It's like, we give up, you know. This one we had coordinated with another clan ahead of time.
Ooh, allies.
Yeah, so they ran all of their dungeons at the same time we ran all of ours. And then once we were both done, we all met up and we hosted it this time. I think they're going to host it next time. So because you have to, the clan has to spend like money, or not money, but
okay, resources. There's some sort of resource.
Yeah. So we all
let
we
you
all,
do this.
Yeah, we're all constantly donating resources into the clan. The clan then spends the resources on launching these big multiplayer, you know, dungeons, which then give rewards to everybody.
Sure.
And so for this, our clan paid for the dungeon to be launched, and then we invited them to come in. And so once we launched it, we gave them an exclusive like link into the dungeon, so they all came in. So there's 2 clans, and we took it down that way. So next time, I'm thinking they're going to host it for us.
Is there a limit to the number of clans that you can invite?
Well, technically, you can just invite the entire server. I don't know if there might be a player limit.
Okay.
I think it's like...
Certainly there's some limit.
45 or 50, maybe, or something.
I thought you had 40 or something last time you did it.
Not everybody shows up, though.
Okay. You have 40 in your guild total.
Yeah, 45-ish.
45, okay. I mean, but that's your entire population, not how many were online.
Right.
I got you.
Yeah, but the other thing, too, is now the level cap's raised. Like, a lot of people are already pushing past. I was able to limit break something finally,
oh,
which is super cool.
Yeah, you did it. You're doing Final Fantasy VII shit.
Yeah, I got my first weapon attribute upgrade done.
Oh, cool. What does that do? Just have an attribute
I do
and it's upgraded?
2.5% more damage to other players.
That's very exciting. I can't tell you how exciting that is.
All right, we're done with Lineage 2.
You roll like 100-sided dice. Cool.
We're done with Lineage 2.
There's 2 more hits on
no,
it.
No more Lineage 2.
And a half.
Play the attribute music. All right.
I've also can talk about Shadow Tactics. I finished Mission 6 out of 13, so I'm about halfway there.
Not Strike.
Not Strike. It's Shadow Tactics. There's tactics. There's striking involved, so I guess it'd be okay. But there's more tactics than strikes.
Yeah.
The mission was pretty cool. Just want to say that I do really appreciate the different choices you have in the game. There's 2 kind of basic paths to it. One was to disguise one of the characters and go around and kind of get information from these scared citizens.
Oh, remind us again what Shadow Tactics
So Shadow Tactics is a tactical, real-time game with an isometric perspective. It takes place in feudal Japan.
Okay.
So far, it's been a lot of fun. One of the cool things about it is that you have different options for how you tackle these scenarios. So there's a very big stealth component to the game. And one of the characters is kind of this disguise-oriented one. You can pick up costumes, disguise yourself, and that lets you talk to guards and walk around camps kind of freely. And one of them is more of a just ninja guy, which, you know, he climbs on roofs and has a shuriken. He can throw rocks to distract people. And so he's got his own unique way of going about things. So you essentially have 2 perspectives of I can use more of his skill sets or I can use more of her skill sets in this particular mission. And I went with his just because that happened to be the route I ended up taking. I went closer to where he wanted to go, so I kind of completed it that way. But it's cool looking at it and realize if and when I play this game again, I'm going to get a completely new play experience going through and playing it on her route just because I'm going to have different trials and tribulations for it.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's cool. Been cool.
And so I wanted to ask you about the pause feature, because in the first time we spoke about this, you said you really liked it because it felt like it added tension to it. So the idea being that you can pause combat. Well, normally in games like this, you can pause combat, tell everybody what to do, and then unpause and they execute. Whereas in this game, you can't. It all happens in real time, so you still have to execute everything. But, you know, it adds tension, it adds some more difficulty. You liked it, and then last week when we talked about it, you said that was getting really annoying, and now you're
so I'm
mad
kind
it.
Of going back and forth, okay. And I think where I'm at right now is that at its peak, it's a really good addition not to have pause. But for a lot of the gameplay, it's very annoying. So the reason I find it annoying, when I talked about it last week, is that you may set up a plan and you may be ready to enact it, but you need just about a second or two to pause the game and set it all up. Mm-hmm. The alternative in this game is you don't have that 1 or 2 seconds. So you just have to wait for all the routes and patrols to kind of come back to where they are to then enact your plan. So you're sort of waiting around for 30, 45 seconds to actually play the game, which isn't fun.
Right.
But at its peak, I had this one particular instance at the end of the level where there's a very small blind spot for this guy who was underneath a platform that I had to get to because I was trying to eavesdrop on these guys talking. And I could go through the blind spot fine with this one guy, but there was somebody else on the platform also looking down. Mm-hmm. So what I needed to do was play one character's flute to distract everybody on the platform to look towards there and say, what's that noise?
What's that flute playing
over there? What's that flute playing? That's kind of odd.
That's not suspicious.
Not suspicious. So, you know, they don't know what it is. And so my guy can get a little bit into the blind spot.
What kind of songs do you play on the flute?
It's just like it's like a bird.
Wouldn't they immediately?
It's a bird call.
Oh, okay. So I'm like,
I think that's what it comes down to.
Immediately jump on the platform and be like, no one should be playing a flute in the bushes over there. That's obviously a distraction.
No. It's totally normal.
Okay.
It's Fuel Japan. They're playing flutes all the time. They got to relax. They're in the camp.
Hey, you know what? I've never been to Fuel Japan.
It's not a stressful environment.
What do I know about it?
Yeah, you don't know anything.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Come on. This is Shadow Tactics. This is real life.
Way too much real life. On my part.
Okay. So you play the flute, right? And that gets me a little bit towards where I need to go, but the guy's still going to turn back in time. So I need to also throw the sneezing powder at the guy who's got eyesight over where I need to walk. So he starts sneezing, right?
Okay.
And that way his vision is reduced for a short enough amount of time that I can walk to that blind spot. Yeah. I throw the shuriken to the guy under the platform. Now no one's under the platform who's alive, and I can eavesdrop successfully.
It's a sneezing powder?
Sneezing powder. You should try it if you're trying to sneak into a camp.
Again, wouldn't that also be extremely suspicious?
No, if someone just started sneezing, that's not that weird. People randomly start... Do you not just sneeze?
Yeah, but I feel like if somebody threw a bag full of powder at my face, I'd notice.
No, they don't notice. It's just... disappears from the visual perspective.
So basically...
Quickly...
You had two guys you had to distract. You had one dude start playing a song on a flute. Another dude's throwing bags of powder at him. Mm-hmm. And somehow they just go, well, I guess that's normal. And you got somebody underneath.
Well, it's just like weird little distractions. These things pop up. It's not like everything is hunky-dory okay everywhere in life, right? So these little distractions happen. And they look over and they say, okay, they get back to their business pretty quickly. But by then, I've already snuck in, done my job, eavesdrop, jump in the river, get out on my raft, say peace.
Yeah.
Normal life in feudal Japan.
But if you'd been able to pause, that would have been...
But if I'd been able to pause, it wouldn't have had as much tension because I had to time things correctly to make it all work out properly.
What's the trade-off? If something's difficult, it's...
Yeah. So it was a rewarding experience. And that's why I think probably where I'm going to stick with it is that at its height, it's a cool thing not to have pause. But for the majority of the gameplay, it's annoying and adds extra time to the game that shouldn't be there.
Okay. All right. Well...
I'm still playing it, though, and that's what matters, because I slice through games pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So that I'm halfway through it and still playing is a good sign.
How many hours do you think you've logged on this one so far?
So each mission is between 1 and 2 hours, so probably about 9-ish hours.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, you're still playing it.
I guess the first mission's a little shorter, but 8 to 9 hours.
Well, I've got like one super quick thing. Do you have anything else for part one?
No, that's good. That's my updates.
Yeah, all I was going to say is I got to see Deadpool 2 on Sunday.
Cool.
And you haven't seen it yet.
I have not seen it.
So if
I've been in Denver for the weekend, so I haven't had a chance to see it yet.
Yeah.
So I do want to see it. So when Rachel and I can finagle a time to go sit down together and watch it, we're going to go see it.
You should go see it this week so we can talk about it next week.
I would like to.
Because I got opinions. I got thoughts.
Okay. I'm excited. It's unlike the other Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. I'm not sick of Deadpool because Deadpool is very different.
Yeah. It is.
At least Deadpool 1 was different.
I've got opinions.
Okay.
It's a great movie.
So I want to see it. We'll talk about it as soon as I see it.
All right, part one.
Done.
Let's finish this in wrap, and then we'll come back in a second.
We finished in wraps. Wrap.
I think listening to the podcast, this is going to be a very meandering sports game thing.
No, we're we're not meandering. We're meandering the fuck out of this. I mean, it doesn't mean anything.
There is a thread through here. Maybe by the end of this section, I'll understand.
Okay, start us off. What
okay.
You got?
All right, part two. Welcome to part two. I'm going to talk about... Well, I'm going to start with Blood Bowl, and then we're going to go into kind of a... As I was just saying, meandering walk through sports games dating back all the way to like 1984.
It's only meandering if you let it meander.
My hope is that by the end of the section, I'll have an idea of what the theme is here. And then at the end of it, I'll be like, this is the theme.
Don't commit to a theme until you're ready. That's right. My motto.
That's a great motto.
Yeah, I have a lot of mottos.
All right. So, so Blood Bowl, you talked about it last week. I started playing that. That's the, Warhammer Fantasy World meets Mutant League Football, basically. So,
right.
it's a tabletop game that's existed for a very long time, and then they poured it to console. Did it Blood Bowl 1? They had Blood Bowl 2 out, and I was invited into a league to play Blood Bowl 2. And as you remember last time, the bogus journeymen got obliterated, and I double checked with the guy who runs the league, and he's like, "Yeah, that's like so statistically unlikely. It's
sort of like winning the lottery."
In the worst way.
Yeah, bad lottery, but you won.
Basically, to kill a player when you have to roll like a die to actually knock them over, right? So that's already one set of chance you got to hit. And then when you hit them, you have to roll another die to break their armor, and that's another pretty low chance. Like, you roll two dies, and you have to hit over like a 9, I think.
Okay.
Or 10, depending on the armor.
It's pretty low odds.
And then on top of that, you have to roll again to actually... to injure them, and then if you actually roll like a high enough number on that to kill them, then you have to roll another die, like a 1 out of 6, to actually kill them.
You have to do 4 separate rolls.
Yeah, it's like 4 separate rolls. It's incredibly
unlikely. Are they all rolls in a row, or are they rolls throughout the game?
No, it's in one set.
Okay, so it's not like,
one, two, three, four.
I knocked him down, and now 3 people get a chance to injure him. I knocked him down, now maybe I also injure him, now maybe I... mortally wound him. Now maybe I legitimately kill him.
It's like I roll to knock him down. I roll to break their armor. I roll to injure them, and then I roll to kill them. Yeah.
You're bad at this game.
It's really awful.
I can't believe how bad you are.
So
you should be better at luck.
Well, we'll see what happens. Anyways, so
when you play Fallout, do you have a high luck stat? Maybe this is all coming to bite you back in the ass.
All right. So I was supposed to play a game last night, the guy I'm playing is named Andrew Raetano. I hope I'm saying his last name right. He's coming up here in a second because this is actually kind of cool. So he lives in New York, and so he wasn't getting home. He's supposed to get home at 11, so we're gonna play at 10. But then he missed his train or something, and so like by the time he was gonna get home, it was like gonna be close to midnight, and in my time. And Aaron and I had to get up so early this morning to get to work, so I was like, I can't stay up that late.
It's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, so we're going to try to play this afternoon before the Rockets game. But he, if anyone's familiar with the game, Super Russian Roulette, it's a game that he actually developed for NES, the Nintendo Entertainment System.
And when did he develop this game for NES?
It was released in 2017.
And NES came out in like 1985.
Yeah.
Cool. So, all right. That makes sense.
So check it out. So he did a Kickstarter back in early 2016 and raised $84,000 of his $20,000 goal. Right?
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, people were really into the idea, I guess. So he's kind of, I think he's known up in New York. He does like a lot of like retro computer architecture reprogramming, and for example, I was reading on his website earlier this morning, he uses 3 Sega Genesis to create a visual show that he performs.
He's an artist in the gaming world.
Yeah, he's an artist. He's like artist first, I'd say. He's like an artist, computer
right.
science.
His medium is through video games.
Right. Electrical engineering. Like, same people who use like chiptune music, who like go back and reprogram old like consoles to create music that they weren't designed to do. So that same kind of world.
That's pretty cool.
So he coded the whole thing in 6502 assembly. So let me quick history lessons. I didn't know this, and this is actually kind of neat. So the 6502 is an 8-bit microprocessor first introduced in 1975. And it's famous for being the least expensive microprocessor on the market by a huge margin. This is actually what launched the home computer revolution of the early 80s. So that's going to be the chip you find in, like, I think the Commodore and,
okay.
Yeah. And also, Nintendo. So he's like literally constructing his own, cartridges. Like, I was looking through his website. He actually somehow solders these chips together, puts them in a modified toaster oven to get all the solder to like melt in.
Right.
And then builds the cartridge maybe pulls old ones apart, puts his new chipset inside, closes it with his game loaded on it, and that's the new game.
I did something similar. So my PlayStation 3 broke, and one of the ways that it suggests fixing the problem that I had is to apply a heat source to do this exact same sort of thing.
Resolder.
Yeah, to resolder it. I didn't want to put it in my oven, and I didn't have a big enough toaster oven to just dispose of like that. So I used a hairdryer, and it did work.
Really?
For about 20 seconds. It was not quite good enough, unfortunately. Okay. And then we got robbed, and the PlayStation got stolen, and it was done. So I didn't have to worry about it anymore.
Yeah, problem solved.
Problem solved. Done.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask him more about this. I think, you know, we've talked about having some people on the show who are in the game industry and also have like been more entrepreneur level, you know, game industry. So he's somebody. Yeah, I was thinking on the way over here. I was like, this would be a good guy to bring on the show.
Definitely.
Although he lives in New York, but maybe next time he's in Austin.
We can figure out something.
Yeah. So last time he was here, he was actually he was debuting his game during South by Southwest 2017, and we hosted it at the brewery. Because we were having Party World Wrestling was happening, so he's involved with those people. So he came in, we set the game up. So basically, imagine you got an old CRT TV, right?
Right, and, because you cannot play it on a flat screen.
Right, so you've got an NES amazing. Plugged in. It's the real cartridge, real NES, slide in just like a real game. It's not hacked together at all. I mean, it's a real deal, except for the fact that it's not licensing whatsoever. So maybe it's not the real deal. Maybe it is hacked together. It's really well done.
Yeah, I wonder how you consider that.
I mean, you can buy it. He sells cartridges.
I think it's irrelevant. I think just if it's an official Nintendo game. Obviously, there's no more official NES games.
Yeah, it's not licensed. So,
or maybe there's just usually you have the Nintendo emblem on it where it says it's officially licensed.
I can't imagine they would license this game.
Let
me explain to you the gameplay here.
Right. Well, I think from the name we can assume that it's not entirely family friendly.
Right. So it involves using the NES zapper gun.
So it's called Super Russian Roulette, right?
Super Russian Roulette.
Okay. Go back and get that name in there again.
So let me. This is a description from the website.
Yes.
This is a description. So it goes, pull up a chair and rustle up some virtual nihilism, partner. Super Russian Roulette pits you and up to two friends or strangers against a trash-talking cowboy, impatient to get on with the ultimate game of chance. There's a light bullet in the zapper's chamber. Is your name on it? Do increase actual dread. Add penalty shots of bottom-shelf hooch for the losers. Keep spinning the barrel till only one player remains. So I played it with him that night at Fourth Tap, and you literally just put the gun up to the side of your head and pull the trigger. And then it tells you if you win or lose.
And this game raised $80,000 on Kickstarter.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun actually. So he, you know, the cowboy. Some games like the cowboy just talks shit the whole time as everybody else dies, and then sometimes the cowboy loses, and then you just finish the game out with the dead cowboy on the screen, which is really awkward. It's definitely worth checking out. So I'll put a link to his website and to the game in the description for this episode.
Sounds good.
Yeah, but this got me onto. As I'm moving towards the meandering, this is meandering threads. So I'm going to meander. Here we go. Meander one. Mutant League Football, I talked about that a couple times because it is related to Blood Bowl. A friend of ours sent me a link to, apparently a group called Digital Dreams Entertainment redid the game. And it came out October 31st, 2017. Speaking of Kickstarter, they raised $138,000 on their $60,000 goal. And
good.
So that's how they created.
They are, so this new version isn't out yet.
No, it's out. It came out.
The Kickstarter was on October of 2017.
No, it was released
in
October 31st, 2017. Yeah. And the reviews, I looked at the reviews, they're like middling reviews, like average. They're like, it's rough around the edges, but it's supposed to be. And I'm like, I don't know what that means exactly. And I watched some videos.
It's a terrible game, but it's intended, so yeah. You should buy it anyway. Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to, I don't know. It's not. It's on like my backlog for backlog consideration.
Oh yeah, yeah. You gotta work up to the major leagues of backlogs.
Right. It's not on my A list backlog.
Okay.
It's,
yeah.
You gotta
have your D league. Maybe D league for backlog kind of makes sense, right?
Backlog
because they could develop the game further.
I like it.
Developmental league to get up to the ranks of backlogs.
I like this. So Mutant League Football, the new version, is on my backlog D league.
Cool. Yeah, makes sense. I got you now. Universal term.
Yeah. But, so here's going to be the actual better thread. So, I'm going to get us to NBA 2K17. But before that, we're going to go through NFL Blitz, and then we're going to go through Madden 93-94, which is where we're going to start.
Okay.
So,
You're segueing us from Blood Bowl to Madden currently.
Yeah, so I'm still, because... See, maybe I could have ordered this better because, like,
you could have done Blitz. And then Blitz seems more close to.
I think I was doing
League
chronologically, though. I was thinking, when we were kids, remember when Sega Genesis? That's when Madden 93 came out for the Genesis. I think it was 92 first came out for the Genesis.
Okay. But
basically, the game was actually originally conceived in 1984 and didn't release get until 1988, and they had no NFL license. It was released for Commodore and Apple II.
Was it called Madden?
Yeah, Madden Football.
So they got Madden's name. They just didn't get
John Madden was
NFL.
He's been part of it from day one. You should go back and Google the picture of the first game because it's it's ridiculous. It's like John
ridiculous.
Madden like, looking young because I'm used to only seeing him as like an old man. But he's like super young.
He used to be young and spry.
He's like,
I don't know about spry, but he used to be young.
You know, like the high C man who kicks through the brick wall and is like, oh yeah. Right?
Oh yeah.
That's Madden.
Oh, yeah.
In this, it's like him punching through the... Anyway,
it's a great Family Guy clip. Do you remember that? Where they're in the courtroom, and, like, Peter's, I don't know, doing something Peter-like, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, they display some evidence. Oh, no! Oh, no! Oh, yeah! Yeah. He just busts through the wall, and then slowly steps away.
Yes, I do remember that.
That's a good clip.
The first one for SNES and Sega came out in 1990, no NFL license. So the Madden 93, I think the reason why we think about that one is the first one. That was the first one I owned, but it's also the first one that had the NFL license.
It's the first legitimate one then.
Yeah, and actually since 1990, they have released a Madden game every single year since.
They have. That is
including
absolutely incredible.
The streak is still going, which is insane to think about how they keep making the same game.
And it's not even popular on PC. Which is really interesting to me.
Yeah, so it started on PC. Like, it's a DOS game or something.
Oh, I didn't know it started on PC originally.
Oh,
I guess that makes sense. That's the easiest thing to...
Apple II.
Right.
Like the first...
It is incredible. I mean, right now, they don't even have it on PC. It used to be on there. It just did so poorly that they stopped making it.
Yeah, it's all console now.
It's just so... I don't know why... Sports games in general seem to be more console-heavy, but...
I don't know, the controllers? Having like, the actual... Physical handheld controller
maybe
helps.
And I guess controller usage for computers has just been higher in the past probably 10 years since the Xbox 360 controller, because that was the first really good controller to come out on the computer.
Oh, really?
In my opinion. I mean, they've always had like Mad Catz and other peripherals that have been available, but
Logitech,
the Xbox 360, Logitech was a really good controller that also lasted longer than like a year of usage, a year and a half. It was wireless. It's the exact same controller as the 360. And now they have other controllers too. It's easy to use a PlayStation 3 or 4 controller on the computer too.
Yes, it takes some abuse, so when your friend comes over and slams it on the ground, it doesn't immediately break.
Yeah.
Then?
Yeah. Sometimes you gotta throw a controller. Just gotta let it out.
Oh, man.
But yeah, that could be another interesting talk about why. Does
I didn't know
Madden
that.
On? Yeah, so.
I thought the 360 controller was like that. Was that good for.
And I don't know, I'm not saying this was absolute scientific fact that that's what changed controller usage
on
PC.
I've read the studies.
Okay. Well, I'm just giving you my anecdotal evidence on it that just watching how controllers have been used, that was the first step where those types of controller-heavy games, coincided with roughly the same time as the 360 becoming more popular and available on the computer.
Okay.
So maybe that's part of it, but it's funny that why isn't it back? I mean, FIFA's still on the computer, even though it's not as big as the PlayStation counterparts or Xbox.
Maybe it has something to do with the more global...
Yeah, maybe that has to do with it.
I feel like because it's a more global market, the console would be the more obvious choice.
Right, a little bit more readily available instead of building a $1,000 computer. You can have a $400 console or even play. I mean,
it's like a console sturdier than a computer. But if you think about like moving it around and that kind of thing, it's.
I guess you could have a PlayStation 3 and just play the old FIFAs or old Maddens.
Yeah,
if you're around the world.
But I bring, well, before I give you my awesome segue, HB Toss Left. That, remember, do you remember me talking about how back that's like
the I do remember
game-breaking play, basically?
Where you played, you did that play and you won.
Yeah, so I was typing that in, so trying to get more details to see if anybody else had, like, knew this. And I couldn't find any anyone talking about that. But people, I found tons of forums, people asking, how do you beat the HB, you know, halfback toss plays? How do you do this, like, for, like, 13, for 15, for 18, like... That's still a thing.
Somehow that play is still OP.
Yeah, they're like, you just have to see it coming. You have to predict that they're going to do it, and then you get in the way. I don't know if that's true, but anyway, so here's
the play.
So here's my segue, and we had talked about this a little bit before a couple episodes ago about the interest in true simulation in sports versus just arcade style play, and so Madden was all about simulation as much as I could, right, and so. Basically, through the 90s, it was all about how well of a job could they simulate a football game. And then NBA Jams came out and, you know, started adding this far more like super popular arcade style thing. And that was created by a company called Midway.
And you would literally get on fire and your ball would burn the entire net as you score baskets.
That was great.
It was great. NBA Jam is fantastic.
Yeah, and so the people who made that game, Midway, which also made Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, fighting game time. Yeah. What?
Which is going to come up in a second.
Cool.
Two guys over there named Sal DeVita, who's the lead artist and game designer at Midway back in 97, 96, and Mark Turmel, who was his creative director. So Sal DeVita is a huge pro wrestling fan. And so they were playing around with they were going to do a football game, and they were playing around their motion capture room. He just started doing wrestling moves.
As you do.
Yeah. And apparently it was so hilarious that they're like, this is the game. Like, we're going to take
this is the game.
Yeah, we're going to build a football game around
inspiration
this.
Comes in many forms.
Yeah. And so before I go any further though, I need to give a huge amount of credit to an article on Vice Sports written by Aaron Gordon back on November 6th, 2014. I'll also link that. If you want to get more information about the development of NFL Blitz, go check out that article cuz it's really bizarre. I'm going to give you the highlights here.
Yeah, what else do you got? So they're using motion capture and filming wrestling moves.
Right, so the idea is they wanted to, so we're getting, you know, moving away from that sim more into arcade fun game. It was wrestling style hits, super fast play, 2 minute corners, 7v7. And if you remember, in 1998 it came out for N64. So first came out in the arcade. It was a huge hit. And then they launched it in 98 for N64, which is when I think you bought it.
That's when I bought it.
And then I remember being at your place and we'd play that game.
We played it a lot. Forever. It was a ton of fun.
Oh my gosh.
It changed footballs.
Changed a lot of things.
Changed a lot of stuff. But yeah, I mean, at the time, neither of us really watched football.
No.
So having the simulation, yeah, Madden was fun, but it was sort of dabbling fun. Like, oh, this is kind of a cool novel thing.
Right.
Whereas Blitz, we could sit down and just play for hours on end because it was sheer entertainment as opposed to kind of just mild interest.
Yes, yeah. And I was reading, they actually worked very hard to make the technical aspects of the game really easy. So like lining up passes and that's my only example. Lining up passes.
The game was much simpler to digest.
I mean, we were in like
something like
98,
that.
We're in 8th grade?
Right.
7th grade, 8th grade, I guess? Yeah. So not that we couldn't play a technical game, but it made it extremely accessible.
Right.
As part of it. And also,
and we played a lot more games than, you know, other people, so making it accessible. I mean, accessibility is an interesting thing back then because people who played games were kind of all gamers, but now there's a different shade of gamers, right?
I think that's why I did well in the arcade. And also,
makes sense.
It was also like one of the first kind of party games I think we played because it was like a whole bunch of us would just hang out and play it.
That's totally fair. It can be tough to have a local game and actually have everybody enjoy it because usually the different skill levels can make it kind of frustrating.
Yeah, but this one, it was so visually brutal and the games were so quick that, you know, you didn't have to wait long between and you could enjoy watching somebody else play the game. But here's the, we were not aware of all the controversy around this because we were kids. There's a huge amount of controversy around this game. So when they were developing it, so the NFL gave them the license, right? Because they're just like, hey, it's going to be like NBA Jam. And this, you can read, you can get all the details here in the Vice article, but the gist of it is they told them, hey, it's going to be like NBA Jam. And the NFL's like, cool, here's the license, right? They didn't talk to them again until the game's done. And so,
how naive they were back in the day.
I know, right? And this is also, to put it in context, this is also back when like the brutality of football was still being celebrated, and the whole controversy around concussions and the safety and health of the players was not really a thing yet. This game was, the history of this game is very much tied up with
this. This is all about old school football.
Yeah, this,
the violent. I mean, at least in terms of
the following 14 years of NFL blitz history are very much tied to, you know,
right, the sheer physicality of the sport,
right? And I'll get into that for it in a second, but basically the guys from NFL show up, and they so these two guys, Sal and Mark, play the game for them, and they're like, okay, we'll be right back. So they go to the other room. They come back and they're like, so we're gonna wash our hands of this whole thing. We're just gonna refund your license. You can just have it, like, don't worry about it. We're just going to take the license back. We'll give your money back. We'll just call it a day. Because it was so violent and bloody, apparently. And so these guys knew that, you know, without the license, it's not going to sell. So they spent the weekend dialing things back, making compromises, and brought them back and said, hey, what if we release this? And they agreed to it. They ran a trial in the arcades to see if it was still fun. Like, oh, if we don't have what they call it? Wait, hold on. I've got the...
What do they have, fatalities in the game, like Mortal Kombat? That's
brutal, dude. What is the name of this one?
Spinality.
It's the... I'm finding the quote because I got to tell you this. Yeah. The spine buster move. That's where apparently you pick a guy up vertically, hold him in the air, and then drop him on his head.
Yeah, that's probably good they didn't have that in the game.
Yeah, the exact...
Like, not even with the NFL.
The quote from the Vice article is, when they saw that, one of the executives literally goes, are you guys fucking out of your minds? And so they dialed back. They tested it out in the arcade. It still was a massive hit. It was the number one revenue-generating arcade machine at the time. And then the NFL clears it. And so then they asked, like, hey, we need to see, like, the motion capture animation. So they just sent them, like, basically the not the animated, not the textured, but just, like, a animated, the stick, basically the stick figure structure of the character against a gray background.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's a gray skeletal designs that you see on them.
Right, which is how they think they got it approved, because the game came out, it is visceral.
It is, but it sounds like it still is, it's a lot less visceral than it was before the NFL said, okay, guys, seriously, yeah, come on. And I think it's probably a better game for that, because even though it was violent, I felt like it was the right amount. Like, it was perfect, it was arcadey,
yeah.
And it wasn't, it was graphic, but not, like, absurdly graphic. Like, I don't know, paralyzing someone visibly is like kind of too much.
Yeah. Still
Whereas like exploding somebody in an arcade style is sort of like so ridiculous that it doesn't make sense, right? It's a little, it's enough removed from reality,
right,
that you can still enjoy it as a human and not like emotionally have to get invested in a spinal injury, which is awful.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I think that's probably some positives that this conservative approach helped with the game.
Yeah, some
conservative.
But like, for example, one of the things they did too was, aside from removing the spine buster, they removed that. They reduced the amount of time after a play where you could late hit somebody.
Okay.
So it used to be like the play would end and you could just like, you had all this time to like just pile everybody on, and just you hear people screaming and moaning in pain.
Okay.
So they reduced. I mean, you could still do the late hits. That was totally a thing. Like, if you remember correctly, like you knock a guy over, you have like a second to hit a button, and your guy would elbow drop him on the ground.
Right.
Still do.
Yeah,
that.
There was some crazy stuff in that. Yep.
Yeah. But they things like that. But so here's what happens though. There's a lot of controversy over this. Like, there's a commercial that came out that showed a football player, you know, beating a marching band with footballs and knocking them over, and that was like how they were celebrating the game. Where was it? I even wrote down this quote because I thought, here it is. In the commercial, they say, deadly long-range passes, linebackers without conscience, a wretched assault on the senses of fair play. No refs, no rules, no mercy. It's like, that's a... So...
It's pleasant.
Yeah, so the following decade, you see a whole lot of issues coming up in the NFL with concussions and all that, and player safety and injuries. And so,
as they should. Some awful things that happen to people.
Do you want to take a guess at how many unique games they released between that first one in 97 through 2012 when the most recent one came out?
How many blitzes they released?
Yeah. How many unique releases? There's a couple like gold editions. And
gotcha. Those. I'm going to say 6.
10.
Impressive.
Yeah. They did a lot.
So more than every other year.
But every single year, they continually reduced the violence and like, not gore, but...
So just sort of as a changing of the times as people have grown more understanding about...
In fact,
how awful the long-term ramifications are of playing football.
Right. We started losing our taste for the violence of it.
Right.
Because that's what they used to celebrate in the 90s, at least in this Vice article, they talk about how in the 90s, that's football is about the brutality of it. And now football is about the skill, but player safety.
And there's the certain brutality. I mean, the physicality of football is always going to be a big component of it because you have these giant, amazing athletes going at each other at full speed. And you're like, who's going to come out on top? And some of it's like sheer determination. Some of it's who's the most physically gifted, physically fit, whatever the case is. But you just see that on the field and then it's over, right? And you're like, wow, that was amazing. But now the after effects, the aftershocks are actually known. And you're like, I feel bad for you because, you know, you have higher suicide rates from concussions.
Yeah.
The average lifespan of an NFL athlete is like, late 50s is like their average lifespan,
really?
Something like that. I don't know for sure off the top of my head, but it's significantly lower than what URI's lifespan is going to be.
I mean, back then there was no talk about player safety really, but nowadays, at least ostensibly, you know, the commissioner...
It's actually either California or Colorado, somewhere I think out west, made it illegal to play football below 13, certain age.
Yeah.
As a state or local municipality. But even then, if I had a kid, I love watching football. I would never let my kid play football minimum before high school.
Yeah.
It's way too dangerous.
Yeah, totally.
Anyway, that is sort of the thing is that's where football is now. No one would have thought about that 20 years ago.
So as that mindset changed and became more in the public consciousness of the danger, every release became less and less violent. And in fact, in 2005, they lost the NFL license outright. The NFL's like, oh, we can't be associated
with
this.
It's over.
Right. In between then and now, Midway actually folded as a company, and EA picked them up. EA picked up the license to Blitz. So EA already had such a good relationship with the NFL through the long-lasting Madden series.
Right. Midway split up a lot of their licenses.
Yeah, and actually, interesting point I forgot to mention. When NFL Blitz came out, it outsold Madden by lots.
Hilarious.
So, yeah, Blitz was a far more... But you can see also where the public's interest was at the time. They're more interested in a arcade-style
absolutely
hitter than as opposed to a true sim. So that's that shift. And then since then, 2012 was the last kind of reboot. There were no late hits. There were... the whole thing. So basically... the quote from the article is that it became almost one of the sims to which it was originally opposed. So NFL Blitz in 2012, having not played it, from what I understand, it was really just like a football sim, which at that point played Madden, right?
Yeah, you're like, let's just get the better experience.
Yeah. So speaking of sims, here's my final segue to my call to action thing also that's from this segment. Look, all right, NBA 2K17. That's what I'm talking about. So while I was in Galveston this weekend, the beach house we had rented had a Xbox One, stack of games. I saw NBA 2K17. I was like, yeah, let me play it. So threw it in there.
Give it a whirl.
Yeah, you know, I'm just trying to relax, you know. This is the best basketball sim I've ever played.
Damn, how many basketball sims have you played?
Yeah, played a couple.
Okay.
I've played some of the EA ones, and they're clunky at best.
NBA Live.
Yeah, and it just don't feel good. It's just like...
Yeah, I think NBA has been the one that EA Sports has always been a little bit behind in. Obviously, they're the leader of FIFA. They destroy Pro Evolution Sports, I think, is the next biggest one, to the point where they even dropped sponsorship of the UEFA. Pretty recently.
Really?
So Konami owns Pro Evolution Sports, and they sort of seem to be getting out of games to some extent, but they seem like they're just giving up and letting FIFA have full control. And that's that way for a lot of their sports, except NBA.
Yeah, because it's like the 2K, and I was doing some research on it after playing it this weekend. I found a lot of people were saying that the 2K series just blows EA out of the water. My experience with what it was that. I mean, I had such a fun time. It wasn't too difficult to pick up. Super fun to play. It's like very, like super photorealistic. But really what I got into was this career mode. And so in my brief research, this morning at 5 a.m. or 6 a.m., I was trying to find, okay, well, I was really into this career mode thing. I want to learn more about it. So apparently career modes in sports games have become more and more of a thing over the last 8 years. And
yeah, you're sort of looking for how do you differentiate 1 year to the next.
Yeah, it's like, okay, cool, sense? A sim. I've got a sim, another iteration of this. So what they've been doing is, especially in this one, it was it actually starred Michael B. Jordan, the actor, in the story mode.
He's a legit actor.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. So you start out as
he's also been in a lot of sports things.
So the career mode kicks off with like you just got recruited out of high school. You pick the college you're going to commit to. There's cutscenes with your old coaches, your new coaches, you know, friends, family, mm-hmm. you know, you go to, and you pick your, you commit to your college, you play through that, you know, all the hype around, you know, college basketball. And then depending on how well you perform, you may get drafted straight into college. I think maybe you have to stay another year if you don't. I did well enough before I got drafted.
Yeah, yeah, I'm just a little bragging.
But after every game, it tells you like where your draft projections are. And then you get drafted. I got drafted by the Raptors, which I was not happy about. But I was like, all right, fine, I'll draft the Raptors.
Poor Raptors.
Yeah.
At least you can get drafted by the Jazz.
Hey, I went ninth overall. So
it's not bad. Yeah. I mean, it's not like good, but it's not bad.
It's not bad. Straight up.
It's ninth.
One year of college play.
And it was fine, I guess. Yeah. Whatever.
But, okay. You know, the whole thing there, you meet rivals. So anyways, like I had a really good time playing it. So my question then was, I'm now on the hunt for what the best career mode in sports sims are, because that really adds an extra layer of fun to the game, because it's not just a sports sim. Now
especially because you like RPGs, you like a story component, and that adds that to a game that's otherwise,
yeah.
You know, you might not feel this way, but I kind of feel like you play a sports game, you're like, okay, the next game is sort of the same thing. You're getting a little bit better each time, but you don't have the ongoing persistency that a lot of the games we like have.
Otherwise, it's just the same thing over and over and over and over again.
Right.
Right. And so, for me, it hits that RPG element. It hits the sports sim element, which is fun. And so it just hits the stories there. So I looked at like NBA 2K18, for instance, but that one got shit on a lot for two reasons. One, people were comparing its story mode, even though I think it was directed by Spike Lee, which is crazy to me. But they didn't do the high school, college, pro thing. It was more of a like blacktop amateur than into D League, NBA, or something like that. I don't. To be fair, I haven't looked at it too much. Just I saw a lot of complaints about it.
It's like going from the and one pro circuit to to the D League directly.
I think people love that feeling of you got to be that star high school athlete that went to a college team, and it really drives home that hey, you're the best person on this team.
Part of the game, part of a lot of games, is sort of living this fantasy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the fantasy people see is, I don't know, LeBron James going from high school to NBA directly, or Kevin Durant playing 1 year and then going there. It's not some random dude was able to struggle. And even though that's a good story, someone's able to kind of go from playing out on the street to getting noticed, being able to go to the D League, go through all those trials and tribulations, and maybe just do it on sheer determination.
Yeah.
But that's not the fun fantasy people want to engage in, right? That feels a little too much like work and not enough like, I've been given the body of Adonis, I'm going to make people suffer.
So I looking into it, I know Major League Baseball, the show, has had some really great career modes. FIFA, both the 17 and 18 apparently have like they tie together. So if you start FIFA 2018, you can continue your story from 2017, which is pretty cool.
It's pretty smart.
Yeah,
I'm surprised more people don't do some sort of continuation like that. Like get you to buy every single edition. That's got to be the goal.
That's a reason to buy it again. Yeah, it's like I continue my story. Finally, though, the 2K18. So people shouted it for the story. But also, it was a microtransaction to the teeth.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember the controversy of paying $5 for a haircut.
Yes. Oh, and thank you for reminding me of that. The prices on these games, what the shit? You buy the 2K17 still costs $60 for the full game. The gold version still cost $90.
A game that's 2 years older, year and a half old.
It costs just as much as 2K18. If you want to buy the like super ultra, you know, all the stuff, whatever, you get at least one free haircut. it's like $150.
Get a free haircut.
Yeah, for a two-year-old game. And they're about to announce 2K. So May is when they announce typically 2K19, which I'm looking forward to.
So the question is this run by people who are just stupid? Or do they actually make more money that way? Like, if you were to reduce it to $20, certainly more people would buy it.
Yeah.
But would 3X the amount of people buy it is the question. Maybe they run the numbers and seeing people want to go back to the old one, or which seems odd. It seems very counterintuitive.
I could see that. But you checked the numbers on active players.
I did. So I was looking on just Steam charts. Yeah. So we don't have access to PlayStation or anything. But there's about 2,000 people on right now playing NBA 2K17. Mm-hmm. And 2K18 has about 11,000 people on.
Yeah. And that's, of course, assuming that the demographics of Steam are equal to those.
Right. And usually they end up being pretty similar from what I looked at in other games.
Okay.
I would say at least within probably 30%.
But I do know sports games, I think, are favored on console.
So there's certainly more. So I would expect more than 2,000, more than 11,000.
Oh, okay.
But I would say just multiply both of those by three or whatever the number is.
I gotcha. Yeah, but but like in terms of the microtransaction thing too, I think this year, at least the last year, has really seen companies crossing the line for consumers. Like, they've actually gone too far.
Right. We've talked about that two or three podcasts ago with the Netherlands and Belgium passing laws specifically targeting loot box gambling.
Right.
And that's the point it's gotten to.
And like Battlefront, removing them all after the outcry. And then
entirely, yeah.
Then 2K18 catching a lot of flack for $5 haircuts. After you spend...
As they should have.
Yeah, after you spend like $100 on the game.
I remember when the game came out, actually, now you're talking about it, the reviews were mostly negative, which means that Steam, that's, I think, less than 25% of people rated it positive.
Really?
And most of the complaints were microtransactions, because they're ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, your game should be absolutely lambasted if you're going to engage in a practice that charges people a 12th of the game to have a slight cosmetic change.
Holy shit, yeah. If I pay $60 for a sports game, I want the whole game. If you're going to let me customize my player, like, I just paid you $60.
Right.
I should be able to customize. I may have to earn it. I may have to play a lot to get it. But don't make
me. There's got to be some way of getting it.
Yeah. That's a key, I think. There has to be a way to get it that's reasonable. And I remember the argument was that for a player who didn't want to pay additional money to get to that point was just insane.
Right.
It was just taken forever. And I think they may have gone back and tried to fix it, but damage done, you know.
They did change a lot of the prices, and they gave people some extra credits who purchased the game.
Yeah.
So little kind of gestures, but you have to be pretty greedy at the start. And I think a lot of the other problem is things get designed around those microtransactions, right?
Yeah.
So it's hard to just retrofit them into the game.
Right.
The economy is probably all broken.
If they're thinking about microtransactions from day one, then, yeah.
Right, the economy is just...
For me, damage is done. I had no interest in getting that game at all. 2K17, I think I mentioned earlier, if it was on sale for like $20, I'd buy it.
Sure.
I don't think I'd spend any more than that. But, you know.
Well, maybe one day. Maybe when 2K20 is out.
Yeah. But like 2K19 is about to be announced, so I'm like holding out hope that it's going to be awesome career mode, sans excessive microtransactions.
Just a better game overall.
Yeah, that's just a good game.
Just a good game.
Just make it good.
How absolutely greedy of you want to play a good game.
I'll give you $60.
Just give them money.
And you give me a complete game.
No. They'll give you 10 haircuts for the next game. You can pre-order haircuts.
I'll take that.
Pre-order haircuts.
Get your haircut pack.
Get a free beard trimming, with your haircut pack.
You just paid $60 for this game. For an extra $15, you can get the hair expansion.
Shit. Hair DLC.
The sneakers in the game might be more expensive than they are in real life, but...
But you'll have them forever. There's no wear and tear on virtual sneakers.
That's right.
Oh, my God. You'll get indestructible sneakers. Otherwise, they wear away over time.
That's right. Yeah, real sneakers break down.
Not our sneakers.
Electronic sneakers?
No.
All right. That's a really long section, but I... Hopefully we made up for it being short in the first one, and part two we're going to go for what? Or part three is going to go for 2 hours, 3 hours?
I don't think it'll end.
All right, great.
So
let's take a break.
Yeah, before this never-ending segment.
So everybody use the bathroom, get a drink of water, and...
It might last less time.
This is it. This is the end.
But it might also be eternal.
All right.
Those are the options.
Oof, dude. Every time we go to break, it's getting worse and worse. Take a break. All right.
Welcome back.
I'm yawning. All right.
Yeah.
I just crashed.
Ooh, yeah. Well, we just spent a nice long segment about sports, so let me give you a little bit of a break. I'll be talking about Super Mario Odyssey, a game that doesn't have lots of awful violence or spinal contusions because Nintendo would go insane.
Why would you play that?
That would not be Super Mario.
Oh, dude, I know a Nintendo game where you shoot yourself in the head.
Oh, yeah. officially quote-unquote licensed by Nintendo.
All right.
But not.
So talk to me about Super Mario.
Super Mario Odyssey is a very highly rated game, as most Mario games are, that came out October of last year, 2017.
We're going to interject real quick. Are there any poorly reviewed Mario games?
I don't know that there are. There's probably ones that are mildly reviewed.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say, for the most part, Mario games are... Well, mainline series Mario games are extremely high quality, highly reviewed. And even most of the offshoots like Paper Mario and the Super Mario RPG are both good games.
Some people love those games.
I'd say so. And Nintendo certainly puts effort into making sure that they are up to snuff. I think the quality control on Mario and Zelda, their biggest heavy hitters, has always been very strong. And that's really one of the things that, even when Nintendo has crappy systems, has kind of kept them afloat, because you'll buy the games just for, or buy the platforms just for those games.
Yeah, people bought Super Nintendo for Mario games. They bought N64 for Mario 64. Like, that's
how it goes. And true. So it's been a good strategy. And when I see certain companies kind of squandering their big franchises at times, it's really frustrating to see, because you realize, like, that's easy money. Make a good game, you'll get so many people on it.
It's so simple. Let's just do
so simple.
Let's just what are we doing here with the podcast?
What are we doing?
Let's just go make a good game.
Well, we don't have a big IP. That's the problem. Otherwise, we would.
Let's just go get a big IP.
No, you can't do that. That's crazy. You already have it. That's the difference. They already have the IP, and all I have to do is make a good game.
All I have to do is not fuck it up.
They have to not fuck it up. Yeah. But a lot of companies fuck it up.
Yep. Like Sonic. Poor...
Oh, poor Sonic.
Poor Sonic.
When did Sonic get bad?
Oh, Chris.
I was not in really on the Sega train.
It got real bad.
I think the only Sega I owned was a Sega Saturn.
Oh, I'll send you some videos. I really want to know how bad Sonic got. Those wonderful people at Game Grumps did the time.
To show how bad Sonic is.
Played.
All right, well, Mario is still going strong. However, so I played it on the airplane to and from Denver. I went to Denver this weekend for a vacation with my wife.
What'd y'all do there? Why'd you go to Denver?
We just kind of general hiking, beer, etc. Had a good time.
Sweet.
Probably didn't eat as healthy as I normally do, so I felt kind of crappy at times.
It was vacation,
but my body didn't realize that, and so it still attacked me.
Yeah.
It was very rude of it. Luckily, so I didn't get to play a whole lot of games last week because of vacation, doing work before vacation. I did get to actually play Super Mario Odyssey finally on the Switch, and we used the Switch for the really cool component of you can pick it up and go wherever with it, right? So we're playing on the plane like a handheld device.
Okay.
I will say that I did not like it as much as other people seem to.
Okay.
And I think a lot of it comes down to why I play games. So Rachel's also played the game and has actually put more time into Super Mario Odyssey than I have.
She likes it?
And she does like it.
She likes
it a lot relative to her liking games.
Okay.
Like, she doesn't play very many games, right? You know, the amount of time that I play in 2 weeks is more than she plays in a year, probably. Right. Something like that.
Okay.
But she likes it, and some of it is because it is sort of a good mobile game. And I don't want to say that in a negative way, because mobile games are pretty crappy.
What kind of... Explain to me the game. Yeah.
So Mario games in general have a... at least lately, like a 3D kind of open worldish feel to them. They're not open world, but open ended.
Like,
so each world is very flexible in where you can go.
Mario 64.
Yeah, like you can explore a little bit. You don't have, you're not railroaded into how you're going to play the game. There's a lot of good mobility and flexibility and just getting around and doing fun things without necessarily having a crazy amount of skills already developed to do them. Mm-hmm. So it's very easy to play these games. It's really easy to just kind of jump in and have a good time and be have just kind of a wealth of content thrown at you, and you decide how you want to go about it.
Okay.
The way that Super Mario Odyssey works is, so it's a 3D game. You go to these different worlds because Bowser has kidnapped Princess Peach, as normally happens, and he's going to force her to marry him, which is the subplot, the main plot of the game.
No, when you really think about that.
Yeah, it's pretty awful.
That's like really dark.
It's pretty dark.
That is a terrible.
Yeah, this giant spiked turtle guy is forcing this pretty young princess.
I'm having a moment where I'm like debating, okay, how vulgar and R-rated do I want this podcast to become?
Well, you decide that. I'll keep describing the game.
I'm going to dial back. I'll just leave it up to your imagination just how terrible
it is. How awful it is.
Yeah.
So you go from world to world. You're kind of chasing them. He's collecting things that are going to be used in the marriage. Like there's, I don't know, the dual band of friendship, whatever the thing is in one world, the flower of hope. That's not what the names are, but it's not really relevant what the names are.
Okay.
So you go to these worlds and there's all these little things that are messed up and you're trying to find these moons on the world.
So Mario, it's just like Wedding Crashers. Mario's just trying to...
I don't know that Wedding Crashers is the right...
Mario's trying to ruin a wedding.
He's trying to ruin a wedding.
This is about
that only one side wants to have happen.
This is like a Wedding Singer.
This is like Wedding Singer.
He's going to, no. It's like
maybe it's closer to Wedding Singer than Wedding Crashers.
I'm just going
to
start naming wedding movies.
It's like wedding. The wedding wedding.
So basically, Bowser's planning a wedding. Peach isn't really into it.
Yeah, this sounds like a what is it?
And Mario's running around trying to ruin everything.
The Hallmark Channel type of movie.
Yeah.
Okay,
except
so
way more rapey.
Way more rapey. Yeah. And way more awful.
Way more awful.
So anyway, it's a Nintendo game which has very
Nintendo
going on.
A bastion of good morals.
Well, you know, when you put it into a cartoon, I guess it makes it okay.
I've seen some cartoons.
I mean, to be fair, Bowser is a bad guy. They're trying to get the point across that he is a bad guy.
That's true.
This is probably the best way of doing it.
Right. You should not force people to marry.
Bowser is clearly bad. So they are, I mean, that's a good thing, I guess. Maybe that's what they're going for.
Let's get back to the
game. As I was trying to say, you collect these moons to power up your spaceship, the Odyssey.
Okay.
And to go from planet to planet, basically trying to catch up to them and rescue Peach.
Okay. So in this game, the worlds are not connected by pipes. They're connected by space.
Yeah, right. So you go fly. And so there's a certain number of moons on each world that you collect. And you collect them in a variety of different ways. Some of them are just hidden in plain sight. Some of them you have to complete some sort of challenge to do. Mm-hmm. A big way of getting them is to buy beating bosses on the world. You get these mega moons or multiple moons. So you get multiple moons in one fell swoop. But each level has, let's say, 15 moons that you have to collect, but there might be 30 moons that are available. So the way that you go about it could result in you actually beating a world by not beating a boss, which is pretty neat. I think it's a cool concept in the open-ended gameplay nature of it. So you kind of are playing the game, again, kind of how you want to play it. You just go, jump in, and that's sort of the mobile game aspect, in that it's simple to just play for a little bit. You don't have any necessary big connections between one playthrough and the next.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, oh, I need to remember where this thing is so I can go here and then do X, Y, Z to get it.
Okay.
You just sort of jump in, go around places, go do things, and you find some moons, and then you go on to the next level. So you are kind of playing the game, performing a skill set that's not necessarily challenging, but isn't like stupid trivial. Like if you haven't played a lot of games, you'll probably have some challenges on a few things. If you played a lot of games, it's very easy.
Is it grindy?
No, it's never grindy.
Okay. All right.
I never feel like it's so easy to find moons that you don't, a lot of games with those collectible type of things, especially collectibles where you have to find them to go progress the story, it gets to be very frustrating because it's just this stupid treasure hunt for something not fun.
Okay.
But finding the moons is never really annoying.
So it's still providing you with new content, new challenges, new... Okay.
Right. So you're still getting kind of cool new things to do.
So the mobile aspect, I guess I'm trying to understand.
So the mobile aspect is just that it is very pick up and play oriented.
Okay.
Mobile games, you know, you can play for 5 minutes at a whack. That's what they're good at. Right. 10 minutes while you just have some time to kill. And this is sort of the same way, in my opinion, that you could play it for 5 or 10 minutes while you're just waiting around for something, assuming you have a Switch nearby.
Right.
And say, okay, cool, I did my thing, I'm done, I can move on with whatever I'm doing for the rest of the day. So the pick up and play nature is very simple, easy. You don't have to necessarily play it every week or every month. You can just do a little bit here and there. And then next time, however much you do, cool, you did a little bit more.
Gotcha.
The difference is that unlike, so most of the mobile games have a kind of pay-to-win aspect, or you pay for microtransactions, right? Mm-hmm. And those typically railroad you into playing the game a certain way because they want you to spend money, and they've designed everything to funnel through a particular set of actions that will get you to spend money. Mario doesn't have this railroaded gameplay as we're just talking about. You have the flexibility when you're in a world to just roam around, and you find moons, mm-hmm. and maybe you don't even find all the moons in the world. You just get what you need to go on to the next level.
Does it have microtransactions?
No, it doesn't have microtransactions.
I'm going to ask, now I'm thinking about this, do we see microtransactions in Nintendo's IP at all? Or their big
tentpole
franchises? Is that something we see there?
They have Fire Emblem Heroes. I'm not sure exactly what the ownership is, because Fire Emblem is a... like Nintendo licensed game, mm-hmm. like, but Nintendo doesn't make it. So I'm not sure exactly how the legality works there, but Fire Emblem Heroes is a very big mobile game.
Yeah.
That has a ton of microtransactions, but actually a pretty fair system as far as microtransactions go.
Okay.
Like, it's still pretty rewarding to play.
But like Zelda.
But Zelda and Mario and all their main titles, no.
Well, kudos to them.
And that probably is why their games are also consistently good, because they are actually devoted to making a good game first.
Right.
And we'll throw in microtransactions later if it makes sense, maybe, which they haven't to date, because it hasn't made sense.
Okay, cool. I'm glad I asked that question. I was curious. All right, so...
So I think it does... Yeah. So what that makes me think about is, why do we play games? So when you play a mobile game, it's because you have 5 or 10 minutes to kill, right? It's time to kill, typically. I mean, people play mobile games for different reasons, but right. I think the biggest thing is I just want to kill some time while I'm waiting around for XYZ to complete. So it's not necessarily a very rewarding activity. You wouldn't spend your entire day doing it, because you are literally just, it's better than looking at a wall. That's essentially why you play a mobile game, is it's more entertaining than looking at a wall.
But it's more entertaining than, you know, reading the news too and other things.
Right, and so there you have other options too.
Yeah, but I get what you're saying.
It's... effectively, that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily a very rewarding thing for most people, but oftentimes that I want to do something that's better than staring at a wall is also kind of related to stress relief, which is a big reason why people play games, is to veg out and not... You know, that's why not everyone's playing Dark Souls, because that's a stressful game. That is not good for stress relief.
Right.
Right, at all.
That's why I stopped playing.
So that, right. It's a fantastic game, but not good if you want to relax at all.
Nope.
And this game is a is a great game for stress relief. It's, you can easily hop in. You kind of get that same mobile feel of a quick fix, but you do get a little bit more. It's certainly a more engaging game.
Yeah.
It's certainly a much higher quality game than any mobile game out there. So I'm not trying to diminish the quality of the game by saying that, but it's also, I don't play games for stress relief typically.
Right.
Or if I do, my stress relief is actually funneling any anger I have into the game.
Okay.
And so maybe I do it for that, but I don't typically like games that are kind of simple challenges, even if they're really well made or really expansive. I'm not playing games to explore, which is a big part of the game, is exploring. And it's well done. The worlds are cool.
It sounds like you're not going to finish this game.
Well, I think where I'm going to play it is on plane trips.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's a perfect game for that, because I don't have access to my computer usually. I don't always necessarily want to read. Sometimes I want kind of to have a little bit of an interaction, and I will still enjoy playing this game more than watching a typical movie.
Yeah.
Because at least it's interactive.
Get your Mario fix.
Right? Still get some Mario play in there.
When did the game come out?
October 2017.
Oh, so it just came out.
It's a very recent game.
This is the current Mario game.
This is the current Mario game.
Cool.
It's also, like I was saying, a game that I could put 3 months in between playing, and I don't feel like I'm going to lose anything.
Yeah.
Whereas if I'm playing Final Fantasy, if I don't play for 3 months and I haven't played the game, I'm like, I have no idea what's happening.
Who are you people? Where am I? What's going on?
Why are you doing what you're doing? This game doesn't have that.
All right.
So I like that. I typically, though, will play games more for like the challenging aspects, or kind of the rewarding nature of just playing the game itself or learning something more. I like games with heavy mechanical systems, like Europa Universalis 4 is a very intense game that takes 10 hours as a tutorial, essentially, just to understand anything at all.
Yeah.
But I really like learning those systems, even if it's not necessarily the most useful skills in the world. I do at least have a better idea of the geography of the world in the 1400s.
Yeah, but also there's like a broader skills that you learn from those kind of, when you master those kind of systems in a game. I mean, it's not like that's the only place those skills are applicable. I mean, you learn ways of processing information, figuring things out. Like, I always take Grand Theft Auto as an example. I played so much Grand Theft Auto in my life that it's really easy for me to memorize directions at places.
How funny. That's a perfect example.
You get really good at spatial awareness and driving. And so I think anybody who plays that game can attest to the fact that it's like, you've played a lot of Grand Theft Auto. You know, you kind of laugh at people like, I don't understand directions or how to read a map. And you're just like, how do you not know how to do that? It's like, and then I'm like,
totally didn't play Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, because you spent thousands and thousands of hours doing that exact thing, you know? So, yeah, I get what you're saying. So, yeah, but like,
video games do have, so there's aspect that makes me feel like I'm not wasting time in that. Oftentimes, movies and TV can kind of make me feel like I'm wasting time.
I hate that feeling. You drop like an hour or two into something, you're just like, man, that was just an hour or two I wasted.
Right.
Yeah.
And that becomes, just as we get older, that's become a bigger and bigger thought for me of, I don't really want to waste time.
Yeah.
You have a limited amount of time. I don't want to waste time. And oftentimes, TV and movies feel that way. But they also, I feel like TVs and movies are more on that stress relief side, right? Or escapism, which are similar in terms of structure.
Something can serve both purposes for different people.
And absolutely, that's true. I've just found myself gravitating more towards the more cerebral type of games.
Sure.
And which is just an idea that kind of popped in my head as I'm playing the game of thinking about, this is a really well-made game. They did exactly what they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. It's not going to probably be one of my favorite games, but it's great for what it is, and I'm glad it's on the Switch, especially because that is perfect for going on a plane ride, or if I'm on vacation and I have an hour, then I know I'm going to be at the hotel with nothing to do. I can play this game, and it's better than the other options I have the time, because you're not always either going to have time to really deep dive into something, or the mental capacity to do it. Sometimes your brain just needs a break. There are all these reasons that this could make a lot of sense in certain situations for me.
So like for me, for example, I might like that kind of game because, you know, I spend all day hyper focused on something else, very technical and detailed. And so that's, I think, why I play Lineage 2 so much. It's because it's fun. It's got enough stuff going on, but you can play for 5 minutes, and it's very stress relief / sometimes escapism.
Mm-hmm. And you get rewards from the game. It's giving you a progression of your character is better. You are better, right? So it gives you this mental fix that is a very good thing to balance in the rest of your life. You can't go all the time.
Right. But it also makes me sad, too, because there's games that, you know, you and some other guys will get into and y'all talk to me about it. And I'm like, man, that sounds really cool. I'd love to play that, but I already know I don't have the time or mental capacity to, like, even something as simple as League of Legends. I mean, there's a time period.
It's funny when you say it's simple, but yeah, go ahead. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, but like, you all were like really into it.
That's the only game I played for about 2 years.
Yeah, but sort of like, you know, all of
our friends. And a lot of other friends.
Yeah,
about
and
eight people or so.
And I remember a brief period of time when I was actually living here for a minute.
Right.
You got me.
We
played some, yeah. And what I just realized that ultimately, I would love to master this game. I'd love to play a lot of it. It seems like a really fun game. Seems like with a lot of stuff going on that I'd love to get good at. I'm just like, I just don't have the time or the energy to do it, which sucks because I used to have that time and energy. So we talk about why we play games. Yeah, it's I get envious sometimes when I see games that, like, y'all are getting really deep into, and I realize I probably don't have the time.
It's just not going
to
happen.
To dedicate to get good at the game.
And you know? This is something I will want to talk about in the future. A very kind of philosophical question, but how it relates to games of, you know, you live your life in the way you want to live your life for the most part, right? I mean, there are certain things that kind of pop up that are outside of your control. But for the most part, you're choosing to, you know, have your brewery, work there, yep. spend a lot of time there, right? And that has precipitated you not being able to play those same types of games as much. You know, you could have a really crappy job that's super easy, and you could play all those games, right? But your life is more enjoyable doing what you're doing. Or more rewarding, at least.
Yeah, definitely more rewarding.
Right. I mean, and that's also another thing, right? Like, this immediate gratification versus long-term satisfaction is an important part, I think, of everyone living their life. And the way that games play a role in that is important. Like, if your life was, I was a grandmaster in League of Legends, and I'm one of the best people that's ever played the game. Or I made, I don't know, $80,000 as a software engineer for the rest of my life, right? You make more money as a software engineer. You probably have a few more people know you as a League of Legends player. Is any life, like, more or less valuable? One, you know, I guess you can say you contributed more to society maybe as an engineer.
Really depends on the person.
Right, so it depends on the person. And so that's something I think we'll get into maybe at some point.
Yeah.
Like, there's different strokes for different folks sort of thing.
Well, really, we're getting so deep there for a second.
That is a legitimate term.
It was like, you got nice and serious. Different strokes for different folks.
Legitimate term. I don't know why you're laughing. That's a very legitimate way of speaking.
Oh, man.
That's kind of where Super Mario Odyssey left me. It's a good game.
Dude, awesome way to bring it back around. That was impressive.
Thank you. I work on that every day.
I think this topic, this thing you're bringing up, it's kind of popped up before, but I think this is going to be a reoccurring theme that we're going to see as we continue to develop podcast.
And it's important. We're self-employed, and we do different jobs,
yeah.
and we still have different weird time constraints, and that affects our games and what we end up doing. And like, I can also, it's easier for me to take a break than it is for you.
Yeah.
Because you have customers constantly, you have other vendors you're dealing with, you have employees.
Which is also why, when we talked last time about the scheduled time to sit down and play with people, it's why it's so important to me, because I can, like, dedicate and say, I carve out time. I'm like, I know Tuesday morning around this time, you and I are going to sit down and you know.
We're going to do this thing.
Record a podcast. Yeah, I know that Monday nights, typically, there's going to be an hour where I'm going to pull out to play Blood Bowl. You know, I know that Tuesday nights, usually there's a Delta Green campaign.
Make sure these things happen.
Yeah, it's just it's more of a intentional usage of time.
Right. Whereas for me, I'm typically really annoyed at something, and so I take an hour break to play video games, and then I go back to whatever I was doing. Yeah.
When I take an hour break, usually I'm having a beer.
A little different.
Yeah. All right. I think that's a great place to, unless you got anything else.
No, that's it. I think it was more just games that are really good that you don't enjoy make you think about things, about who you are and kind of what you value in a way that sometimes games that you love don't make you do, right? Like, it's almost cool that if I played, I don't know, like when I was playing Breath of the Wild, it wasn't necessarily, I wasn't thinking, oh, whatever about my life, right? But I'm playing Super Mario Odyssey, which I don't love as much.
Right.
And I'm like, this is still a really good game. Why? And then we talk about it on the podcast. So,
different strokes for different
folks.
Different
strokes for different folks, as right. it's known throughout right. the world.
So now that you see, so you kindly got all of our social media stuff set up finally.
We're finally available to talk to on the internet.
So I'm going
to
do the first ever No Sick Days social media plug.
Do it.
Right? All right, here we go.
And I'll correct things because all the names are slightly different. Shit. Which is unfortunate.
And you can do this next time, so we'll trade out.
That'll work.
All right.
Whatever.
So hey, if you liked our podcast, I think everybody says rate and review us, right? So definitely subscribe and rate us if it's 5 stars. If it's not, just, you know, don't.
Just go away.
Yeah, just get out of here.
Why did you listen so long?
Go home. Why are you still here?
You yeah. probably already rated us 1 star if you're going to.
Yeah, so if you've made it this far, please leave a 5-star rating or whatever system you're using. Subscribe to our podcast. That's cool. But if you would like, follow us on Facebook at No Sick Days Podcast mm-hmm. or on Instagram and Twitter at No Sick Days.
Yeah, so No Sick Days on Instagram. It's No Sick Days Cast on Twitter.
Okay. And which, you know, once we start doing more things, we'll post more things on that.
As it goes.
Yeah.
And if then, you want to just get set up now.
If you want to email us, hit us up at nosickdayspodcast@gmail.com. And we have a website, nosickdayspodcast.com.
Boom.
Yeah. At some point, if we get letters or emails from people, we can read them on the show and comment on them.
Yes.
That'll be a thing.
Amazing. Things to come.
Things to come. All right. Anyways, I'm John.
I'm Chris.
And we'll talk to you all next time. Later.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.